Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
I don't even try anymore, folks. As you can tell, I'm just so grateful to have a good doorman that if he's a little enthusiastic, we'll just let it go on with that. Good evening. Welcome once again to Madame Perry's Salon, the place where I bring you the most fantastic and interesting and fascinating people I know, and I'm blessed to know a lot. This is your host and cruise director, of course, Madame Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry. And as you know, I've been so excited about this guest coming. Let me just remind you who's here. She's a screenwriter, and she's worked on a show. She's currently a writer on Shadowhunters, which is a show based on Cassandra Clare's best-selling book series, The Mortal Instruments. Before this, she was on the writing staff of The Client List and Cold Case. Now, her debut novel is out, and it is just one of those thrillers. It's just sort of like it's been called a tense thriller. It's like that scary monster in your bed just reached up and grabbed you and won't let you go. If you like a thriller, this is it. And I am so delighted to welcome tonight to Madame Perry's Salon, Holly Overton. Holly, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for the wonderful introduction.
Well, delighted. Just come on in and sit anywhere. I guess you got the message from your publicist that it's like the inside of Jeannie's bottle here.
Yes, so, I did. It's wonderful.
Okay, so find a big cushy place to sit. And nice cushy pillow to sit on. It's glad to have you here. Now, I know you've worked all day, and I don't know how difficult it is to transition from writing for a sci-fi action series and then doing a radio interview. Is it? You have to switch your mind out of a certain kind of mindset.
It does. It does put me in a certain kind of mindset. I feel really lucky. Actually, earlier today, I did a Skype interview with a high school in Pennsylvania who read Baby Doll. So I ducked out of work for half an hour to do that. And then so I feel like I'm, you know, lucky that I get to bounce all over the place and that I get to tell, you know, I get to tell lots of different stories. One minute I'm talking about vampires and werewolves and warlocks, and then I'm talking about, sociopaths. So it's it keeps your day interesting.
Okay, I like that. You must be the most fun person to talk to at parties or anywhere in your group. You know what?
I have a lot of stories.
So let's go ahead and start with Baby Doll, because I got the book. Actually, your publicist sent it to me a few months back, and when I got that out, read it, and I get a lot of books, so I've got a pretty high TBR list, you know, where people don't read it with the to be read list.
Yes,
I started
exactly.
That book, and I did not stop until I finished.
Oh, I love hearing that.
and of course, I'm a big reader. I love to read. I usually have two or three books going during the week anyway. But I started that, I think, when I kept on. My husband and I were doing things. Fortunately, he's a reader, so I think we'll go to lunch, and maybe if we're both really into a book, we'll say, is it okay if I bring my book? Are you going to bring your book? You know, and Yeah, yeah, it's okay, okay. I'm into my book right now, too. Doesn't mean we don't love each other. It just means, what, you know, we're reading together. So I think we had a little brunch at home, and I'm reading. Then that afternoon, he went to get his hair cut, and there's a Korean coffee shop next door to the Korean place where he gets his hair done. And I went in there and sat and read, and while he was getting his hair, and everything, just like the whole day. And he's going, "That was, I know you love to read. That was some book." And he sat down when he came into the coffee shop to get me, and he sat down and goes, "Let me look at that." You know, when he read the back, he goes, "Okay, I get it next." I said, "Yeah."
I always say when people say that they read it in one day, you know, or they read it in one sitting, it's, you know, the most flattering thing you could say, even though I'm also like, but it took so long to write.
You know, we book addicts, we're on, when it's a good story, we just can't let it go. You know,
I'm the same way.
Kind of story, yeah, it's just, if you know, if it's a good story, good characters, and your characters at the book, it's just the characters so well fleshed out, and the plot and everything. You keep it tight, you keep it rolling. You know, there's you know. Actually, I'm going to read, and I'm going to ask you how this feels too. I'm going to read a quote from Tess Gerritsen about that's on the book. But I was going to say, when it's that well done, then you the people are real to you, and you just cannot, you know, put it down because you wonder what's happening, what's going on, what's happened to them. It doesn't matter that it's a book, and what's going to happen has already been written down, but you still got to get in there and know. And to me,
right,
that has got to be the greatest gift and talent of a writer, is that you make us, you just completely draw us in.
Thank you. I'm so glad you feel that way. That's, you know, it's always your goal, and you're alone in your, you know, your writer cave, and you're like, gosh, I hope someone else besides me wants to read this one day. And then, it can be a very lonely and uncertain process. So when you get to hear things like that, it really makes you feel good.
Well, I'm glad, and I am sure I'm just one of the legions of people saying that. Now, about Baby Doll, I was on the front of the book, there's a quote from best-selling author Tess Gerritsen that says, "What a compulsive read, a brilliant first novel that kept me transfixed and entertained until the very last page." So how does that feel when somebody
well,
gives you that kind of...
Yeah, well, you know, and I've been a fan of hers. You know, she wrote the Rizzoli and Isles series, and she's written dozens and dozens of books. And so it's always great when someone of that caliber who you admire and, you know, you hope you can have a career, you know, a novel career as successful as someone like that. It really is so great to get that kind of endorsement. And, you know, just, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of things that are very personal in Baby Doll to me, you know, like as far as, you know, it's about identical twins, and I'm an identical twin, and it's about, you know, a woman who ends up, you know, being a single mother, and I was raised by a single mother. So there's a lot of, you know, even though it's a completely fictional story, there's a lot of personal stuff with me and as far as who the characters are. And so when people say they respond to the characters, I love hearing that, because I feel like there's a piece of me in them.
Well, go ahead and tell us now what Baby Doll is about.
Sure. So Baby Doll is about identical twins. Lily Reiser is kidnapped. She vanishes at 16 years old. And the start of the book, she returns home 8 years later to her twin sister, Abby, and to her mother, and to a life that has changed completely since she's been gone. And she has a six-year-old daughter, and it's the story of what happened to her. And I always say, you know, there's books like Room by Emma Donoghue that were great, and there's a lot of books that tell sort of the captivity story. And I always say Baby Doll is the aftermath. It's about what happens after she comes home to her family, but it's also about the unexpected captor who took her, and sort of his their quest for justice, and, you know, the kind of will he or won't he get caught. And I think that was the interesting part for me, was telling a story that we might have known, but you know, a lot of times in the news, when you hear captivity stories, women who are held hostage, you don't, you're kind of like, the media focuses on more of the salacious details, and they sort of don't focus on the, like, quieter aftermath moments, what it's like, how each person is changed, and not just the person that was taken, which I think is important, but also the family around them. And so the book is told in four perspectives. So you get to hear from Abby and Lily and their mother, and you also hear, you're inside the head of the kidnapper, which is at times very disturbing, of course, but you sort of, I think, knowing how awful he is, like, sort of makes you empathize for the other characters even more, because you sort of understand the psychology of this twisted character.
Yeah, that's it. And I liked, I think that's another thing I liked about the book, was that there are some books like this with the same kind, but you're right, they don't take it from the point where you took it, is from the escape. I mean, of course, there's flashbacks by Lily, but you take it from the escape. And it's true, people, they do concentrate, or the media stories, if you see it in People magazine, they concentrate on the salacious stuff, and people want to hear all the gory stuff that happened. But there's the whole family, and like you said, in Baby Doll, it goes on, you know, how does it change? Lily has, while she's in captivity, which is for 8 years, and she's taken when she's a teenager. And she has a baby during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So with her daughter, 6-year-old, has never known anything but life in captivity. You know, because you'd have to imagine, what a terrifying thing if you've never been outside.
I know.
To see the world and what's going on. But the fact that like it says in the flap of the book, it says, this is what happens next to Lily, her twin sister, her mother, her daughter, and to a captor. And yeah, it affects, it's like the ripple effects from the beginning. It affects the family and the friend, you know, the family individually in their way. Everybody's going through concern, fear, guilt, through all kind of emotions. And then friends, community, neighborhood, how people start watching out, and then people start looking at each other. Well, is it someone among us? And then, you know, the suspicions and questions come up. It does have a deep effect.
Exactly. And that's really what I wanted to focus on. And I think, doing so in a way that kind of didn't, you know, because the other thing I didn't want to do was I didn't want it to feel tawdry or salacious, you know, which is why, you know, we don't spend a lot of time in the cabin where Lily was held, because I really wanted it to be about this family and, you know, it really was about their survival after this horrible incident.
Yeah, because Lily's twin, even though Lily was the one that vanished, has been captured, her twin, Abby, is also going through, you know, horrible things in those years, too. And of course, the mother. But go ahead.
I was going to say, it was interesting because, I was talking to these high school students today, and one of the students asked, why is Abby so unlikable? Which is, you know, Abby's one of the twins. And some people have said that. They think she's a little annoying and for me, I thought, you know, people respond differently in tragic situations. And, you know, Lily had to stay grounded and keep it together and play this role of, you know, the good girl for, you know, for her captor, Rick Hansen. But Abby didn't have anything to, like, kind of, you know, keep her grounded and, you know, force her to, you know, she had her mom to fall back on. And so I think that's just how she reacted. And so I thought it was interesting because I was like, I've definitely heard that. But I also thought it was funny because Abby is based on my sister. A lot of her is, you know, not the extreme nature. I mean, I always joke that it's my sister, you know, turned up to 1,000, you know. and even my sister could, like, it took her a long time to realize, wait a minute, she's me. That's the kind of interesting thing about those characters and trying to make them seem as real as possible.
Going to say, that must be interesting. Now, how, you said those were high school students that you talked to today that interviewed you and that have read your book. How did you feel about their take on it, their point of view of reading a book? Did they see it differently or review it differently than some adults?
You know, they didn't. They actually had a lot of, you know, similar questions, you know, that I've been asked, you know, some of the readings and the events that I've done over the last, you know, few months since the book came out, you know, just why, you know, why I decided to, you know, write certain characters and, you know, what was the inspiration for the story, which was obviously the inspiration, I started the book right after, the news broke about the three women in Cleveland. There had been, I think, there of course have been several other, you know, famous stories in the last 15, 20 years about situations like this, but they were abroad, and this was sort of, I think, the most shocking because it wasn't just one woman, it was three. And it, you know, I just kept thinking when I was watching the news story, you know, if I'd been 16 years old and my twin sister, who was and is my best friend and my other half, and like, I don't make a decision without consulting her and vice versa, like how that would have changed the course of our lives. And so they asked a lot of the similar questions. I was actually surprised because it is, you know, it is mature content, but I think, you know, obviously high school students are much more mature readers these days than, you know, And I think, you know, I do think that it deals with the relationships that the girls went through, and I think it was interesting. But I was, you know, very excited because obviously it's been marketed. You know, it's an adult, you know, women's thriller. So I was pleasantly surprised that teens had found it as well.
And I'm pleased to hear that also. I really am. That's wonderful. So as you're right, so yeah, the situation in Cleveland, the three women in Cleveland, and of course one of those women also had a baby. You know, I think probably because it's on home soil, and also with social media, you know, all that kind of news gets out so much faster.
That's true. So yeah, and you know, there I think it's the constant news cycle that we have going. You know, before it was, you know, you had three channels of news, and now we have 24/7 news, Twitter, you know. So I think these stories get out there more, and you sort of hear about it more than I think you used to.
Yeah, you do. You hear about it more. You hear about things that you know, because they were out of if they were out of your region, you might not have known about it. And so yeah, there's more. And so then tell me more about when you said you know, to write about the story and to create the story the way you did. And you make, and I don't want to give anything away, I don't want to spoil anything, but the captor is somebody, as it often is, somebody who is so unassuming. And
well, I think even without giving anything away, because he is so unassuming, and I think that was the thing, and he's a very unexpected person, and I think he has a job that I think is unexpected, and you know, he's someone you trust, but I also think he's handsome and he's charming, and I always think, you know, when you see these situations, you know, like the Ariel Castro thing, you know, kidnapping and the other, you know, kind of serial like. You know, aside from Ted Bundy, like, they tend to be people where you're like, yep, that guy is going to keep a woman in the bait. You know, there's just something about them where you immediately distrust them. And Rick Hansen in Baby Doll, he's the opposite of that. You know, he's the guy who's going to offer to mow your lawn, and, you know, his wife's going to bake you a cheesecake. And, you know, they're the, you know, the couple that you're like, God, I hope I sit next to them at the dinner party. And I think that's kind of the fun of a character like that, who's living different lives, who's living a secret life. And so I really wanted him, to feel like that. And I wanted the surprise of that. And I think, it's funny because when I first started writing Baby Doll, I had written, you know, the sisters and the mom. And then I just felt like there was something missing. And I wrote a chapter. I wrote Rick's first chapter, and he was fairly awful. And I was like, well, I don't know if it works or not, but I'll just keep writing and see if maybe I don't need him, because, you know, the first chapter I wrote, I was like, oh gosh, this is terrible. He's awful. And I felt uncomfortable writing him. And then I thought, well, you know, that's what you do as a writer. You confront uncomfortable people and uncomfortable things. And he ended up, I think, making the novel even better because of that, because he sort of, his evil is sort of illustrated, sort of highlights the goodness and the, you know, and the darkness that that the sisters and their mother went through. So, but it was kind of difficult initially to write him. And then eventually I was like, then I kind of got into it and I was like, well, you're as far away from this man as any, you know, you could be from anyone. And then it's just this, you know, then you're just getting, it's just the psychology of this person that you sort of have to embrace as you're writing.
Oh yeah. And you have so many specific scenes that stood out to me as this could happen. This would happen. You know, I've read true crime books for years and I've always told people I've got this blog called Memoirs of a Misanthrope that I hope to publish these essays. It's about my crazy life and things that happened to me. Well, I have a few chapters on my life as a freak magnet. And I say, if there is some, you know, ne'er-do-well, some pervert, some miscreant, some reprobate within anywhere near me, some, you know, clochard, whatever, they're going to find me and come at me. And it's always, it's pretty much always, Holly, the ones that I'll say something about it, and I go, well, that guy, you know, gives me the creep. He's been standing out spying on me in my car. And listen, they go, oh, no, not him. He's a sweet guy. He goes to our church or whatever. I go, yeah, the BTK, BTK killer, Raider.
Oh,
yeah,
right,
he was
right.
A greeter at his church, too. So everybody always goes, oh, Jennifer, not them. They're he's got a wife and kids. I'm going, look, listen, I don't know what it is about me, but it's going to bring out the wacko. And I said, no, you cannot judge people like that because, you know, you had the scenes like when he's at his day job and everybody loves Hanson. Everybody loves him. They adore him and his wife. Like you said, it's a couple you want to sit by and people are crazy about it. But then there was a scene where he's rushing to get back to the cabin and he stopped by the police. And he comes up with this story, this card. Oh, well, so why are you speaking? Well, see, this is my wife. She's hot. I can't wait to get to her. You know, she just sent me a picture. And I go, oh, yeah, buddy, get on down the road. And you can know that would happen.
Yeah.
You know, things were just legitimate.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much.
So did and I wonder what is your friends were reading it while you wrote it? What did they say? Did they?
Well, it's interesting.
Offer any
suggestions? You know, I was lucky because I have a big group of, you know, writing friends and my sister, my twin sister is she works in TV as well. She works in TV development, and so when I started writing it, I had written the first 90 pages. And then I was like, well, this isn't a novel. I mean, this isn't a screenplay, and I don't think it's a TV show. And then I was like, I guess it's a novel. I have 90 pages. I guess that's what it is. But it's sort of, you know, writing a novel, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners who've tried to write novels or wanted to write a novel has this same thought of, like, writing a novel seems impossible. Like, how would I ever do that? And so I sort of had that mindset of, like, oh, gosh, like, it's just so many words. and so I was like, I don't know what to do. And my sister, I was out of work, and so I'd asked her to print out the 90 pages I'd written. And I said, but don't read them, you know, just print it. But of course, she didn't listen, because isn't that what family does? They don't listen to you. And so she was like, oh my God, I couldn't stop this. Like, I read the whole thing. Like, and she's like, you have to keep working on this. And so fortunately, and I was like, well, what do I do? And she's always encouraged me. And she was like, take a class. That's what you've always done when you're trying to, like, learn something new. And that's how I got into TV writing. And so I took a class at UCLA Extension in Los Angeles. And I had this wonderful writer, mentor, who taught the class, Eduardo Santiago. He's fantastic. And he said the same thing. He said, I see something here. I think it's, you know, really special. And the class was only 10 weeks. And after the 10 weeks ended, we worked together until I finished the first draft of the manuscript. And then he was like, fly free and make your changes. But he really, like, he kind of gave me that deadline, you know, like every 2 weeks, you know, send you 10 pages, every 2 weeks, send you 10 pages. And so I credit him as well as my sister for, you know, giving me that push. And I always tell the story about him because I'm like his biggest fan, and he's just such a wonderful man. But, you know, like I would pay him, and, you know, he's a teacher, and we'd work together. And I got to towards the very end, I think I probably had 50 or 60 pages to go in the manuscript, but I hadn't been working in TV for a while, and I was planning my wedding and just, you know, kind of stressed over money. And I was like, you know, I'll come back. I'll finish the novel at some point. You know, I don't really have the money right now to pay you. And he said, well, I don't even care about the money. We're going to keep working. All I want to do is see, I never get this close to seeing my students like actually finish a novel that I think has such potential. And so he worked with me until we were done. And then I was able to, like, I was like, I sent him a check when I like got my first job after, and then I sold the novel shortly after that. So I was like, here you go. Like, I'm making good on my promise. It was such a wonderful thing. But yeah, I think having people who will read it and people who will tell you like it is, you know, he would say like, this is great. And I think, you know, and sometimes he'd say like, well, I don't know, this isn't quite as good as the rest of it. And I think you need someone to kind of challenge you and help you, you know, stay on the right track.
Okay, Holly, to have somebody who's so skilled and has such faith in you, that had to be a marvelous feeling.
Yeah, it was exactly, because I was, you know, I'd probably been working on the manuscript for, you know, like 8-9 months. And you get a little discouraged because you're like, I wasn't even thinking about selling it at that point. I was just, you know, getting to the finish line. And so him saying that was enough for me to say, well, if he believes in me that much, like, I have to believe in myself and in this novel. And so it was just so great when to finally finish it and you know, then obviously go through the process of selling it.
Well, I'm glad you had him, and I'm not the only one, I'm sure. This is, if you're just tuning in, this is Madame Perry Salon. I'm Jennifer Perry, and my guest tonight is TV writer and novelist Holly Overton. We're talking about her brand new novel, Baby Doll. And if you want to call in and talk to Holly, the number is 646-716-9922. And somebody's going to get a free book tonight, so a free copy of Baby Doll. So I think we can put all the names, the callers in a little bucket and draw names or something. So, but we do have a caller, Holly. And
great.
Welcome to Madame Perry Salon. And come in and introduce yourself, please.
Hi, this is Carrie Dunn.
Hi, Carrie. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Hi, Carrie.
Hey, Jennifer, how are you?
Doing great, doing great. Carrie's a novelist, and he lives in Baton Rouge.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry. I just tuned in and was checking out your bio on IMDb. You wrote for Cold Case, which is awesome. I used to love that show. Well, still love that show. But you've got an amazing biography.
Thank you very much.
Very well-rounded.
It's you know, it's a journey, as you know, as a writer. Peaks and valleys, lots of peaks and valleys.
Looking at Baby Doll, obviously, I'm sure as a writer, well, how long did you work on it? I mean,
It was about a year and a half, which I know, I say it and it seems short, but I had lots of time on my hands.
Does something like, because this happens to me when I write something and then a movie or something like that will be released, it has a tangential kind of, not the same plot, but kind of similar. And so basically just looking at the description of Baby Doll, and I'm thinking when Room came out, it must have been, gosh, dang it, you know,
Well, here's the truth. I was like, he's going to say Room. I know he's going to say Room. I know it. Here's the truth. Room came out, I think, in 2011 or 2012. So when I started writing Baby Doll, I knew all about Room. And what was interesting was I was just telling – Or wasn't it, oh. I think? Because I'd read Room.
Well, no,
I mean,
just
I'd,
last year because Brie Larson won Best Actress. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, not the book.
Oh, yes.
The movie, I'm sorry.
Yes. I
guess when it
reached
public consciousness, yeah.
Exactly. Well, it's funny, too, because so many people, like, I'll be like, oh, well, you know, the movie Room. And some people, you know, I mean, obviously, like, you know, it did so well in the Oscars, but it wasn't a box office. You know, it didn't, like, you know, shatter records.
Right.
But I will tell you that I was tracking when the movie was being made because I had sold the novel and I was actually starting to work on the screenplay for Baby Doll last year when Room the movie was heating up and winning awards at Toronto and winning awards and you know at all at Sundance and she was getting the buzz and it was that dreading that feeling of dread washed over me because it was such a brilliant movie and. It was such a brilliant performance by her, and Baby Doll.
Don't you hate
that
though? I mean, it had nothing to do with your creativity or anything, but
it was pure timing, right?
Yeah, it's timing. It's annoying.
I was like I said, and you know it's funny because you know the script is there, and you know if anybody's interested, but it is like you know it almost like if the book did better or you know it made you know it was a bit more of a you know. Splashier thing, it might you know break through that, but most people
mm-hmm.
are like, we saw that movie, and you know I do think that sometimes, especially with women's fiction and women's stories, I tend to think that you know they'll make a lot of things that have like for men, and you know like I always say like there, how many war movies have we made, but it generally
exactly.
Like, if it's smaller, you know, narrative stories about women and situations women are in, it's sort of like, well, we did that story for that, you know, we covered that basis.
Right.
You hit the nail on the head. Yes, it was a wonderful movie. But it's interesting though, because when my agent first read, I have a TV agent and, when I told them I had written this novel, they sent it to an agent at their offices in New York, and she read the first three chapters, and she said, I really like it, but have you heard of Room? And I was like, I have. I said, I have, but I promise if you keep reading, it's not Room. And, of course, they realized, like, it wasn't Room, and it is a similar premise. And, you know, I was like, I always like, use this in, like, you know, in fiction, like, how many stories do we have of, like, a woman ends up dead on a beach and a man is going to investigate the murder. You know what I mean? Like there's so many
mm-hmm.
stories. Like nobody's like, but again, you know,
pretty
you just
much
kind
every,
of find your...
every noir book ever written is the same plot. It's just, you know, it's like how
it's
many,
how you tell it,
yes.
Right?
But since it's men, you know, well, it's completely different. You know, it's, you can have Philip Marlowe played by 20 different actors, but it's completely different. But
exactly.
You know, it's, you know, if you have a similar plot line or at least, you know, kind of a different take on a same situation and you're a female writer, well, it's just a copycat, you know, so.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, how many TV movies do we have about the babysitter that seduces the dad, okay? And then somebody gets killed.
I mean,
you know,
it's
how many?
So true.
Yeah.
It's so true.
I mean,
it's like
with my book.
Required to have.
And it was
my
book,
Karen.
Everybody was like, well, this is just like Breaking Bad. And I was like, I hadn't even seen Breaking Bad when I wrote
right.
this. I mean, I love it now that I've watched it, but at the time I had never seen it. Well, this is just like Breaking Bad. And it's like, and then I watched Breaking Bad. And I was like, it's not at all like Breaking Bad. It's just a story of a good guy gone bad. I mean, how many, good Lord, you know, go back to
I
the
know.
Bible. You know, this is
so
just
true.
Like Doubting Thomas or Judas,
yeah.
I mean, give me a break. It's
and
only
and
so
the cool
many
thing
stories.
About it, Holly, is that Carrie's book is called Joe Peace. Joe Peace is the main character. The thing is, when he goes bad, he is much more successful, and which I don't know. I never
like
watched
Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Okay. Well, I need to be taking a lesson from these people, don't I? So, let's see. I don't know. I'll think of something, but I'm not going to tell you now because you'll write about it and steal it from me. But just as I'm just kidding, just joshing. But yeah, same kind of thing. And Joe's and Carrie's book. Joe's got a lot of snap. It's called neo noir, that snappy noir dialogue, but in modern times.
That sounds great. I'm going to have to check that out.
Well, I'm just very impressed that the episode that you actually have a story credit on in Cold Case was actually one of my favorite episodes. I haven't seen them all. But,
oh, really?
I used to watch that show with my father. He loved it. He passed away in April. And it was his favorite show. He'd watch it every Sunday night. And I remember watching that with him. And just very interesting. So thank you.
Well, that's so nice to hear. Yeah, it was a great show, and it was my first TV job, so I learned a lot. It was definitely a great experience and great training ground for, you know, now the job that, you know, the other shows that I'm on now.
What shows are you doing now?
I currently write on a show called, it couldn't be more different from Cold Case, but I'm on a show called Shadow Hunters, which is on it's on Freeform, which is used to be ABC Family. So I'm working on the second season of that. So it's really, you know, like I was saying to Jennifer, it's very different than, you know, my crime work that I do. You know, it's vampires and werewolves and all sorts of supernatural stuff. So it definitely tests other muscles.
I salute your diversity. That's amazing that you could kind of do CrossFit with writing.
yeah, that's what I asked her earlier, Carrie.
Looking at your IMDb list here, is I've always been jealous of people that could cross so many genres so successfully.
I wished I could say I had some sort of natural plan, but I think I don't know if it's helped me or hurt me. I think sometimes in TV, you know, some writers tend to get pigeonholed, which I'm sure some of them are not happy about that. And, you know, it's kind of you take the job you can get. And I was really fortunate on the client list. I'd worked with the showrunner of that created Shadow Hunters. And so he brought me onto this. So it's definitely, you know, when I first started, I'm not the most of our staff sci-fi person, but I've definitely embraced my sci-fi nature, and now I'm the person who's like, we should have a fight here, we should have like a battle, and they're like, and I'm like, who am I? Like, that's not who I used to be. I used to be the, you know, quiet dialogue, you know, all of that. So it's been really, it's really fun though. I just got back from Toronto a couple weeks ago, filming my episode. I got to spend 2 weeks on set and, you know, getting to see stunts and getting to see fights and just getting to be on set and be part of that is just a really, you know, obviously writing novels is great, but, you know, you're alone and, you know, you're fortunate enough if I get to talk to people like you guys that, you know, people like your book, but it's a very lonely process. And so there's something really great about when you're, you know, when you're writing for television. It's so immediate, you know, 6 weeks ago you didn't have a script and then, you know, 6 weeks later you're on a set watching, you know, millions of dollars be spent to bring it to life. So it's pretty cool.
Well, you have a very diverse biography for a writer. I think it's very impressive.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You know, and it's a pleasure to talk to you. And
you know what I wanted to ask for Carrie? Carrie, I'm glad you're here. And by the way, if you're listening and you want to call, and we're so delighted to have Carrie Dunn here chatting with me and Holly Overton, if you want to call in, the number 646-716-9922. You know, I'd ask her earlier, Carrie, because she had an interview with a high school group today that had read her book. And I said, you know, how do you go from spending all day writing about kind of supernatural, fantasy, vampire things, sci-fi, and then you're going to go do an interview with high school, because you have to put, like, into a different mindset. But then I got to thinking, and, you know, and she said, yeah, you do, you know, it's just a different world. Your mind's in different places. But then I got to thinking, and this is what I'm going to ask Holly. Does it ever happen that when you're writing for a TV series, and I've seen pictures, you know, and, like, some of the little fun stuff that the cast has behind the scenes and so forth, if you ever, when you're writing about a character or writing for a character, have you ever had a situation where the actor themselves has ticked you off, and so you go ahead and give them a pretty brutal situation, like maybe, and when I say ticked you off, I mean, like, took a good parking place when it was raining, or took the last cup of coffee and didn't make any more, that kind of thing, you know. And so just wondered, just a question.
No, I'm really lucky that I've worked with great actors who are, you know, super professional and do their job. You know, I might use a character prototype in my novels of someone I'm not a big fan of, you know, if I want to kill them off, you know, just in fiction. But not on any of the luckily on none of the shows I've worked on. I've been pretty lucky about that. But yeah, we do wield a lot of power as a writer.
I'm always reminded of Robert Altman's A Player, and Peter Gallagher's character, you know, is like, who needs writers? I mean, all we need is a newspaper. Look at this. And he's reading news stories. Like, we don't even need a writer. We just, you know, take anything from the newspaper and, you know, look how much money we'd save making the movie.
Oh, that's so funny.
I wonder sometimes if people actually think that in Hollywood.
They do make it. They do think it's easy. Oh, you know, let's just, I don't think that works. I think we should do that. And you're like, you know, sometimes you're like, that was like, 8 people sitting in a room for 2 weeks. Like, it wasn't, no, it doesn't really.
I had an agent on my book. Yeah, I had this prospective agent on my book when I was sending it out, you know, queries and everything. And she calls me back. She goes, we love this. We love this book. We love the writing. Everything is just wonderful. We really want to work with you. And I said, great. Made my day. And she goes, only problem is, could we change the setting from Austin to Miami or Los Angeles? I was like, well, then I'd have to, like, write a new book. You know, it's kind of like
the character,
you know,
in the story.
Can we make him a werewolf? Is that possible?
It doesn't change anything.
That kind of thing. I was like, really? Have a good day.
Yeah. And then if it's a werewolf, they're going to want a werewolf that keeps a diary like these vampires do. And then there's like the werewolf and Abraham Lincoln. You know, you got to keep up with the rest of them. You're going to hold on. And Carrie, you were so delightful. You are welcome to stay with us. I've got to play a spot for our sponsor. We have a new sponsor this week, Instaphobia. So listen to this and back in about a minute.
Here's a crazy notion. What if online networking and marketing wasn't divided over so many specialized networks or platforms? So why so many options? Specialized or not, the business needs are the same. So wouldn't less specialized and more open be better? Wouldn't one platform with the services and tools for marketing and networking be the easiest and ideal find? And if you found it, wouldn't more businesses, artists, and organizations be more engaging with marketing and network for more business? And wouldn't that mean all sorts of opportunities for more revenue, time, and energy? And wouldn't that extra time and energy further encourage new innovative services or products as a surge of new commerce floods local communities with new enterprises who now must network and market themselves for your business? And isn't that the power of commerce? Anyway, that's the crazy notion.
Check out endsofobi.com.
All right, Instaphobia, and if you look on their website, which I have a link to right here on the page, but it's Instaphobia, ENSOFOBI.com. Their motto is networking simple, and simple is marketing. Okay, so this is Madam Perry back in the salon with screenwriter, television writer Holly Overton talking about her debut novel, Baby Doll. And also here on his favorite special cushion is neo-noir thriller writer Carrie Dunn. Carrie has his own special cushion in here, I guess you noticed, in Madam Perry's salon. Because we adore Carrie.
So, Holly, you're an actress, too?
I'm a recovering actress, I like to say. It was a long time ago. I wanted to be an actor, and that was really, you know, my focus when I was, you know, in high school, and then I moved to New York City and studied acting, and I went to theater school and studied and did a lot of, you know, t- terrible plays on, you know, so far off Broadway. Fortunately, my mother encouraged me to move to California and try my hand there because she was like, you haven't made any money here as an actor in New York. And she was very encouraging, and she said, you know, I'll buy you a car and I'll pay your rent for, 6 months, which turned into 9. And I got involved with an acting class that, you know, I met a lot of amazing actors who are now, you know, working and, you know, steadily. And, you know, they say it's a 10-year game, and I think that's true. And I had, like, booked one television show. Like, I was in an episode of Leverage, which I don't know if you ever heard of that TV
right.
show. And
I was looking at that. And, I was reading the plot right now because I used to watch that sometimes.
It was great, you know.
D.B. Sweeney,
like, you know,
is the priest.
Yeah.
Huh?
He was. I got to work right with him. I was like, you know, like, I loved The Cutting Edge. And but, you know, I think I booked one episode in, like, 3 years, and I auditioned for probably 35 episodes of television overall in my time. And I sort of started to realize that, like, you know, I might be that person who might be able to get, like, a couple of roles a year, but I would always need a day job, you know, doing something else. And I really loved writing. And so I think I didn't think, like, oh, I'll be able to make this a career. I just thought, like, well, I need some other creative outlet because, you know, one audition every 3 months or 6 months sometimes is not, you know, creatively satisfying. And fortunately I found writing, and it really was, I say looking back now, I wish I realized how much anxiety acting caused me, because it caused me so much more. I mean, writing is obviously, as a writer, and I'm sure you both know, it's still, you still have anxiety. But I actually, like,
never,
never,
kidding. What time is
but
it?
I was always, yeah. Right, exactly. I was always, you know, just, I would get an audition and I'd be super excited. Like, that first minute, like, I'd get a call or I'd get the email, and then I'd, like, panic, and I'd just be in a panic until the audition was over. And that's not really a way to live someone's life. And so, and, you know, having been, you know, a writer now, I don't want to say that it is, like, you know, natural ability, or, like, it is, you have to be, you're just born with it. But I do think there are certain people who are just born with it. And I do think there are certain people who learn, who have, like, innate talents. I think sometimes it's like that with writing as well, you know, like, you know, I've studied a lot, but I know people who've studied a lot more who haven't gotten the breaks that I have. And so I think sometimes when you just find that thing you're meant to do, I don't miss it. Like, people are like, oh, you could write yourself a part, or you could be a, I'm like, nope, no interest. Like, that.
Does writing under pressure for television, because obviously you have deadlines, and you can't say, you know, well, tonight I'm going to watch, you know, a movie and I'll do some writing tomorrow night or over the weekend. So on deadlines like that, writing for television, when you're writing a novel, does that help or hurt you? Specifically, or,
I'm working on my second novel, and, you know, it's due at, you know, I'm doing edits, and you know, it's a tight time frame, and, you know, I'm definitely nervous about that. I'm self-driven by deadlines. Like, I think I'm fear-driven is, like, what I like to say. But I do think the pace of television, and knowing that you have to deliver, and knowing that, like, you know, I admire, you know, Donna Tartt. You know, she writes a book every 10 years, and they're beautiful books. I don't think I have the attention span to spend that 10 years on something. And so in TV, you know, knowing that, like, you have to get it done, it does really help. I mean, it does force me to create deadlines and say, like, okay, this week I'm going to finish 4 chapters, or, you know, next week I'm going to finish, you know, whatever, you know, the last 50 pages, and then you just sit down and do it. I, like, people are always like, I just don't know how to start, and I'm like, nobody does. You just start.
No, you just. I don't. Have you ever read Stephen King's On Writing, or looked at it?
Yes,
by any chance?
I love that. Yes.
The whole discussion about writers who write so seldom, even though they're great writers, you know, and he's going, you know, Thomas Harris writes a book every 10 years, or, you know, 5 years, and, you know, this person wrote only one book in their lifetime, and you know, Stephen King's like, I just wonder, what do they do with the rest of their time, you know?
It's so but, true. I feel like they're the kind of writers who it's like, today I will work on a paragraph, you know, like that's like, today if I get this paragraph perfect,
what was my word count for today? Yeah, like 34.
Exactly.
He talked about a writer, Anthony Trollope, I think he said, and he would, like, he worked for the post office, and in fact, I think he invented the red telephone booths in London. But he would write from 6 to 8 a.m. every morning, and then he would come home and write from 5 to 7 p.m. every evening. And if he finished the book in that time and he wrote, like, these humongous novels, he would just immediately take out a page and put another page in the typewriter and start writing a new novel. And,
wow.
You know, if it was 7:45, he would start a new novel at 7:45 and finish at 8 and go to work. And it's amazing how the brain works for some people.
It's very impressive.
Yeah, because before 8 a.m., I'm drinking coffee. I couldn't ever
I don't know about you, you guys, but I'm a nighttime person. So my best hours, I always say, are 9. I mean, obviously in television, that's not the case because my hours are, you know, normal business hours. But when I'm writing, you know, books or, you know, I'm writing my own scripts, my perfect hours are 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. Sometimes.
I love that time. 10 a.m. to like 3 a.m. in the morning are beautiful times.
All of us night creatures,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Holly,
there's nobody calling you.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
It was nice to speak with you.
I'm definitely going to check out Baby Doll. And thank you so much for talking to me and everything. And congratulations. What a very career. And you look to be about 21.
I will take that. I will definitely take that.
You do.
You look like Lord, child. I mean, I'm
slightly older than
21. Here's this young lady, and look at all she's done. I feel very, very undervalued.
Good moisturizer.
No, it was a pleasure talking to you, and good luck to you, and good luck on your next novel.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Jennifer, have a good evening, and y'all take care.
Thank you. Carrie, you've already made it better. I'm so glad you called in. Thank you, dear.
Y'all have a good evening. Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. All right, that was fun to have Carrie call in.
That was fun. I can't wait to check out his book. I just saw that it's I think it's set in Austin, right? Is that what he said?
Yeah, it's set in Austin.
That's where my father lived, so I'll have to check that out.
Was that my husband asked me what was this about the infamous Overton gang?
My father he was part of the Overton Gang, which was a crime gang in the 1960s in Texas, in Austin. And they, were, outlaws. what other word did they use? They were criminals. But, you know, drugs and, you know, safe cracking and robbing and prostitution. And they kind of did it all. They were like an all-encompassing crime gang. And so my father ran with them, and obviously that was long before I was born. He definitely lived with the sins of his past, and I think he had a lot of demons he battled. So I'll say that.
Well, yeah, I'm sure, and I don't want to. I figure you gave the information, so I didn't want to embarrass you, but. You know, I always tell people I have criminals in my family, my brothers, and but they're not for the clever kind. You know, mine was the kind of like when one brother was in jail, and the jail in DeKalb County, which is an Atlanta suburb, about 7 stories tall in the building, and so one of them tied up the, did the old rip up the sheets and make a rope, send it down. The other brother put a 6-pack beer on it so he could lift it up. And, of course, by the time it got up there to his floor, somebody was there to get it. I said, they never thought about somebody typing, sitting next to a window and seeing these things. How many windows does this have to go up?
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
How many windows did that go up? And somebody's sitting there typing going, did I just see Nah, couldn't have been to see somebody. So, yeah. And
it's so interesting, though, because my family, they were bad criminals, too. There's actually an article that I found in my research, and it's called Disorganized Crime. And I thought that was such a good name. I just thought that was, like, such a good title for some of the stuff they did, because they were – sometimes they were a bit they just weren't quite as together as they could have been.
They really needed to polish up their strategy and get their game
exactly,
up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, if they were around today, there would have been all kind of like, you know, marketing and network help for them, and they would have been able to.
I'm
sure they could with what they had. And it's like the one brother got the younger brother involved in something, and believe it or not, the detective that arrested them, I had just had a date with him the week before.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
We have a date on one Thursday. The next Thursday, locks up both my brothers for burglary.
Oh, no.
That's
so crazy.
But it is. It is. And, of course, we ended up getting married. Oh, he's a sweet guy. You know, but first, we're like, oh, God, what does he think of me? What does she think of me? But the thing is, he said, you know, my little brother, the youngest one, he goes, he's young. I don't think he really went. He just went along as a big brother. So we're going to leave him out. He goes to juvenile. The other brother goes to prison. But I remember the family tried to get him to go to the youngest brother, Scott, to go to the prison for visiting day. And Scott went and hid. You know, he's about, I don't know, 14, 13 or something. 14.
Oh,
and
wow.
The funny thing was, oh, wait, we got another caller. This is the person. Wonderful person, Kenya Colbert. Kenya,
Hi.
Welcome to Madam Perry Salon.
Hello.
Kenya, this is Holly. So, Holly,
Kenya's the host of everything.
Hey, sweetheart. Kenya's the host of Everything Relationships that comes on Friday night. And she's also, to give full disclosure, she's my BFF, so I can continue the story with her.
Oh, wonderful.
And so when my parents came back, they go, where were you? You know we were supposed to go to the prison. It's visiting day today. And Scott says, well, as part of my probation, the judge said I'm not supposed to hang around criminals, not supposed to associate. And parents go, it's not a criminal. He's your brother. He goes, well, then why do you have to go visit him in prison? So there you go.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, so, we're kindred spirits.
Oh, yeah.
We both have crazy families.
We do. You know, but that's why I said, go ahead and tell the story. I used to not, but I thought, it's entertaining. It's not like I did this stuff, so hey.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You guys, I know you're wrapping it up, but this was a really good interview. I just had to call in just for a second just to say, Holly, I enjoyed your interview. It was so good.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it.
You guys had me laughing so hard. Even when Carrie, I was listening to Carrie, I'm like, okay, I really wanted to call in, but there was such a flow going on. There was no need. I'll sit here and listen to these guys.
Well, Carrie's always delightful, too.
Yeah, good, very, very good story. I can't wait to read Baby Doll, actually. I want to read the books. I love these kind of these stories of ones that you write for. I love the Shadow Hunters, that whole. I big follower of Vampire Diaries. Big follower. So there's the whole Shadow Hunters. I'm new to this, so Jennifer told me about it. And I'm like, okay, I gotta go in and start watching this. I looked it up the other night, so I'm excited.
Oh, that's so good. Well, I'm very excited. It's always nice to, you know, do interviews like this where people are so friendly and fun. I feel like I'm at a dinner party.
Oh, so that's
it
what we want you to feel here. That's exactly what we want you to feel. Because, you know, Holly, I would imagine since you know, with any writer with a full-time job, it's hard to get out and do a regular book tour like other, you know,
exactly.
Yeah. So thanks to social networking and podcast and radio and TV and Skyping.
Yes, I know. It allows us to connect. I love it.
And have a virtual tour.
Well,
I am
Holly,
so delighted.
I got a quick question for Holly about Shadowhunters. So is this season two that just started, or are you still in season one?
No, this is season two, and it starts January 2nd. The first 10 episodes will air, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll air the next 10. So we're finishing next week. Right after Thanksgiving, we finished shooting the last the 10th episode, and then our production takes a break, and we keep writing through the holidays, and then we come back in January, and we'll go from January to May. We'll film the second half, so keep him busy, very busy.
Oh,
but it's a really first season was great. Second season is even better. Just so exciting, like. Just such great character stuff, and it's been really fun, like watching, you know, being part of a, first season show that people really loved, and now getting to come back and, you know, kind of expand on the show and the world and the characters. So it's been very exciting.
Oh, I'm excited.
And actually, Paul Wesley, one of the actors from Vampire Diaries, he's actually directing one of our episodes next season, so that's really exciting too. Or for the second.
No, he's one of the brothers. The chill brother.
Exactly, I know. So he's a very talented director too. So we're really lucky to have him.
Very good. So when I catch it up like this, like I'll just shut down for the weekend and just really just go in deep and just watch them back to back until I catch up with everything.
Well, I appreciate that.
I'll be ready when you get ready for season two. I'll be all caught up, ready to start with you. Don't worry. I'll be there with you guys. I'll be there.
That sounds great.
It was so
all
nice
right,
meeting
yeah.
you. It really was.
Hey, Kenya, and Holly, seriously, as soon as I mentioned you to Kenya, then as she starts going and she's coming back with all the research she's done on you and the Shadowhunters and Mortal Instruments and everything. And so since we've already got her into this, And to being a Shadowhunters fan, let me tell you, when she's a fan, she's a straight up legit hardcore always there fan. I don't even know what she's talking about, and I figure I'll probably never, you know, with the vampires and so forth. But hey, if she likes it, that's good. So since she's already a fan of your work, is it okay if we'll give Kenya the copy of Baby Doll?
That would be wonderful.
Oh,
absolutely.
Thank you. I promise I'll read it and share it. I'll gift it forward. Once I'm done, I'll give it to somebody else and make sure they read it, and we will pass it forward. How about that?
Well, and I would love to offer I will offer Carrie, if he's still listening.
Oh, wonderful.
And Madam Perry, you can contact me, and I will be happy to send him a copy as well.
Be very happy to. Yeah, Carrie was. I met Carrie because he was a client of mine. Because I'm a book publicist. So.
Oh, wonderful.
So he can tell you sometime about how since the character Joe Pease had like payday loans and stuff like that in nightclubs. Once he became a gangster and quit being a cop, I set him up at the Barnes and Noble in Austin, and we had a police crime scene tape from my ex-husband all around the place. A blue light. I got a girlfriend of mine out there, Coco Electric, who's an actual. At that year, she was the reigning queen of burlesque in the United States, and so she came out. I had her come out and read with him because I thought he'd be too shy to read the book. And so she says, "Well, you can't do burlesque in there." I said, "Honey, just come in a sweater and jeans. You could come in a flower sack. Everybody's going to know you're a burlesque queen." And so with her reading the female parts with him, you know, it really
amazing.
Yeah. So be careful what kind of publicist you choose. You never know what they'll come up with, okay?
So
especially me. So Carrie is an absolute doll. And yes, I'll send you his, if you want me to send you or send Elizabeth his address, either one, I'll be happy to. And
that would be great. Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, and we are so thrilled to have had you here on Madam Perry's Farm. I had another question. Oh, yeah, I was going to tell you this, too. In my book, I told you my husband said, when he read the back of it, he said, okay, I want it next. And so he travels a lot. And what he used to do, he goes around the world, he would spend a lot of time maybe in different parts of Africa or something. And when he would finish books that he would take, he would usually have made friends with the Peace Corps people, and he would donate the books to their library. So
oh, wow.
I don't know if you've ever ever heard of Rita Mae Brown?
Yeah,
but,
that sounds familiar.
So that's what we would do, because she was such a prolific writer. So I told her once, when the first time I met her, that we did that. She goes, "Oh, you bring your husband sometime. I love him doing that." She says, "I'm so grateful." So I says, "Yeah, so you know, Holly, your books could end up with the Peace Corps Library, or at least my copy could.
I love that.
You never know. So
that
we
is
just
wonderful.
Share the love around the world, and Kenya will share hers. All right, so folks, this is Madam Perry Salon. Here I go again. Whenever I get somebody so fascinating, Kenya, I'm sorry, it's bad. I'm sorry, Holly, but you're so entertaining. We just don't want to let you go, but I know I have to. So thank you so much for being here. And folks, if you listen, debut novel, Baby Doll. Trust me. this is primo. This gal started off with her first novel. This is fantastic. They'll probably have a movie this soon, and I would be surprised. You're fantastic. Oh, and you also teach courses at the Script Academy.
Scriptanatomy.com. I teach TV writing there.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And so I am going to sign up for your class.
Wonderful.
Don't be afraid.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Oh, okay. I thought you were going, "Oh, my God, she's going to what?" So, yeah, I definitely want to take your class. And anyway, thank you so much for being my guest, Holly Overton, author of Baby Doll. Wish you maximum out-of-sight success with Baby Doll.
Thank you so much, Madam Perry, and it was wonderful chatting with you all tonight. Thank you.